Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacy Toth of PaleoParents.com and author of two paleo cookbooks. The first, Eat Like Dinosaur, kid-friendly gluten-free recipe and guidebook, and Beyond Bacon, recipes that respect the whole hog.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne, also known as the Paleo Mom. I have a background in medical research, and I love to write approachable explanations of the whys behind the paleo diet. I'm also the author of two upcoming books, The Paleo Approach, which is a complete guide to managing autoimmune disease using diet and lifestyle, and the companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook.
Next up, News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. Hey, so I'm really sorry I'm late, but 1 minute before we started recording, I got an email from Paleo Magazine informing me that Paleo Parents was nominated in 4 best of categories. So I'm going to use this platform and my moment of excitement and glee to tell everyone to please go vote for all of your paleo favorites on the Paleo Magazine best of link that's going to be in the show notes right now. And I beg of you to vote for us. I think the category that we have the best shot of winning is the best treat paleo, the best treat recipe for the best brownies and Beyond Bacon.
Oh yeah. Which definitely.
I didn't even know that we were being nominated for any of these things. So I'm like super excited. But I've heard like crazy awesome feedback on that recipe from everyone in the community. So I'm really thinking that we might have a shot at winning. We were also nominated for best culinary recreation with our mango sticky knot rice. I don't know if you've checked that recipe.
I haven't. No, I don't even think I've seen it.
That one.
Silly me.
I think we said it in the post on that recipe, but we actually tried it several times and we were trying to use cauliflower rice at first, which we do not recommend at all. And then we came up with the genius idea that we could use chia seeds for it because it creates that kind of sticky texture that you get from sticky rice, and it worked really well. So, and then Beyond Bacon was also nominated for the best new cookbook under the special topics category. And there's some really great books in there that I personally love, but I will tell you, I believe that Beyond Bacon is the best. So everybody should go for that. And the most exciting, Sarah, The Paleo View is nominated for the best paleo podcast.
Seriously?
Yes. Congratulations.
Oh, I'm doing a happy dance. Congratulations to you too. Yeah, good thing it's not a video podcast because I'd be embarrassing myself like crazy right now.
Right?
See me dance. Dance, 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 dance.
There's
dance.
So many.
Still
awesome.
Dancing.
Okay. I got to talk.
Sorry.
Dance quietly. There are so many awesome paleo podcasts, and I know both you and I, before we did this podcast, listened to other podcasts, and it was the inspiration for...
I still do listen to a couple of other podcasts.
I listen to some other podcasts intermittently. I just don't have time like I used to, but I know that one of the reasons that I became more knowledgeable and have a better understanding of my own personal paleo and the journey and all of that intricate knowledge is because I listen to the Paleo Solution every week for years.
That's how I started.
Me
I mean,
too.
When I first started paleo, that was where I got most of my information. I bought a couple of books, but I just started at the first Paleo Solution podcast and I listened to like the first 90 episodes in my first 30 days
totally.
Of eating paleo. Like that was what I did.
Yeah. And now, you know, there's Chris Kressers, there's Balance Bites, Sean Croxton, Jonathan Baylor. There's a whole bunch of really awesome podcasts around that I wish that I had more time to listen to. Jimmy Moore. And I end up just listening to kind of specific, you know, episodes that people either tell me about or sound really interesting or has a guest of someone that I'm either friends with or interested in. But yeah, so I was super stoked to see the Paleo View included in that because I believe that we have a great podcast. But this is, you know, nominations from the community of the best paleo podcasts out there. So just being nominated is honestly a huge honor. And I think
that's
everyone.
So true. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously it was
as cheesy as it sounds. It is true.
Yeah. So I'm sorry I was late, but I was kind of geeked out and checking out.
No, that was cool. And you know what your 7 minutes late allowed me to do?
Capitalize an M.
Pretty much. I got to finish going through the copy edits for the second third of the book. So it's good. That means tomorrow I can tackle the incredibly long list of design work I got handed today. Woohoo! Woo! Can I tell you about seeing design pages for my book?
It's like, can I tell you? It's can like I tell you? Babies, right?
It is like, it is so much like seeing an ultrasound because it's just this little, I mean, granted, they did 45 pages for me. So that's a good tenth of the book. But it's like that preview, like seeing an ultrasound, like you're like, oh, there's some fingers and oh, there's a nose. And you kind of get really, really excited. But they just nailed the design. I'd given them quite a lot of direction of sort of the feel that I wanted for the book and some of the thematic elements that I wanted. And the publisher kept saying, like, you know, everyone always hates the first design. Like, don't freak out when you see it because everyone always hates the first design. And then he called me when he was emailing it to me because he was like, I think you're going to like it. And I was like, I thought I'm supposed to hate the first design. And I like literally was like bawling my eyes out with my publisher on speakerphone as I was, you know, basically a like blithering idiot going, oh my gosh, look at they, oh wow, look at this. And my husband was like right behind me. We were both just like so amazed at seeing this thing that I've been working on for a year, like all of a sudden look like a real book. I know you know that feeling because you've been through it now, but for me, that was the first. And I have been so frustrated with the process the last couple of months because the book is so big that everything's taking longer than it typically does. And I sometimes get handed a task that I didn't think was going to be my responsibility. So I get really frustrated it's just being a first timer and just going through this process for the first time and you know, not fully knowing what to expect. So to see these design pages and see that they just nailed the design. There was only a couple of things that I asked for them to change, like pretty slightly. And it was just awesome. And it's going to be a beautiful book. Like that's the cool part because it's really has been really important to me from the beginning that sometimes the material in the book is pretty detailed. So I didn't want the book to feel intimidating. I wanted it to feel comfortable. So people like want to read through this science that I'm explaining. And I think that we got that just perfectly. So I'm super, super excited. So now there's like another, I think, intense week of copy edits and all of this design work that I got handed today. And then I think there might actually be like a PDF of the book.
Yay! Let's hope it doesn't explode your computer.
Could. I'm working on a pretty old computer. Yeah.
I feel kind of badly about you talking about this because we have the same publisher and we work with the same person at the publishing house. And when that publisher calls me and says, I'm emailing you the design pages, let me know how you feel. And he sends it to me, even though I feel the same way inside, I'm like, it could be better. Change these things. I'm such a like perfectionist, and I do it about myself and my own work that I never consider needs to hear that sometimes from me. Like, oh, you guys did a really great job. Only these minor changes. He almost never gets that from me. So I'm feeling a little bit of guilt. Like I need to send him an email right now.
he set me up to hate it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, part of it was like everyone hates the first, you know, the first design and don't, you know, and he only sent me two designs and I picked and, you know, there were certain elements that I liked more out of one and liked more out of the other, but between the two of them, they had almost every element nailed. And, for me, it was, I've been very, you know, I was telling my husband last night, that part of this is when I've been joking about, yeah, if the book ever goes to the printer, I'm not really joking anymore. Like my mindset has actually gotten so skeptical about the book ever being done that I mostly have been believing that. And then seeing it look like a book, albeit on my computer screen, just made me completely shift my mindset back to like, oh my gosh, this is actually going to happen. And now it's when the book goes to the printer, not if. So it was, for me, it was such a morale boost. Does that make sense? Because it's, as you know, it's an experience that is really difficult. It's like explaining giving birth to somebody who's never given birth before. It is such a challenge, and it's such a challenge in a way that's not like anything I've ever done before in my life. And I've done a lot of different challenging things. I've, you know, did a PhD thesis, and I've run marathons, and I've done those kinds of things. And this is a whole new, wonderful world of stuff. So it was good to kind of have that little bit of momentum going into these next few weeks, which are going to be really exhausting. So, how's barbells for boobs?
I raised over $1,000. I'm really super excited and so appreciative of everyone that supported me. I want to let everyone know that I gave it my all and that I'm very bruised.
You didn't throw it down?
Not in the beginning, no. I actually posted a 15-second video on Instagram if people want to check it out of the first few sets. Because, yes, I got in many sets in the first 15 seconds of grace. And I got a time of, I think, 4 minutes and 15 seconds, if I'm remembering correctly. My goal was under 5 minutes. So although... Although I feel like I could have done better, I'm very happy because that's my benchmark. That's my PR, and I beat my goal, so that's good. And I really was sore. I should have done a little more stretching and foam rolling and Epsom soaking afterwards. I didn't do any of those things. So I was feeling it the next day, but in a really good kind of way, not in a DOMS, you know, sort of way, like we've talked about on the show before, but just like clearly, you know, I pushed myself hard and I could feel it. And, no, because I didn't drop the bar for the first time in my life, I have bruises on my collarbones. I'm usually really good about, being able to catch it down from a press and, just, you know, when you're doing 30 and it's heavy, it didn't, get as well supported as it normally does. So I've seen some pretty epic, if we were on video chat, you could see my lovely collarbones. And then I have some bruises on my thighs that caused my kids to ask me this morning what happened. So, but I did that for you all because as I was doing my WOD, I was thinking about all the people who so generously donated their money and were so supportive, and I didn't want to let anybody down. So I did my best, and I was really proud to RX that WOD. There aren't very many that I can do as prescribed. And, you know, I felt like if I did as prescribed in under 5 minutes, that was something to be proud of. And I am. So yay for me.
Yeah.
And then I went and did a hero WOD today because it's a holiday today, Columbus Day. I didn't work out Sunday, everybody. You'll be proud of me. I took a rest day because I was still feeling really sore. And then today there was cleans in the WOD because cleans is what Barbells for Boobs was. And then there was also toes to bar, which is where you like hang on a bar like you're doing a pull-up and then you pull your feet up. Actually, it was knees to elbow, not toes to bar. But regardless, I can't get my feet, my knees or feet up that high. So it's just, you know, lift your limbs as high as you can in my case. But, there was my point is that there was a lot of shoulder work in that WOD this morning as well. So
tomorrow will be another rest day.
Yeah. No, tomorrow is strongman, but we don't do a lot. I won't do shoulders tomorrow. I'll do some powerlifting, some other muscle groups. So, yeah. So, I need to take some shoulder pictures because I've posted some on Instagram. I think I even did a video a couple of weeks ago flexing them and people were like, holy moly. I want to get some like professional shots of these shoulders. It's the one part of my body where I'm like, yeah, I'm proud of these. So that's not true. It's not the only part of my body, but it is a unique experience for me to actually be proud of my body for once in my life. And I work hard for these muscles, and shoulders isn't a place where I have a lot of extra skin or fat, and so you can really see kind of the muscle tone and development, and it's something I'm proud of. That's how it went. That was a really long answer to a simple question. I'm sorry.
I was expecting a long answer.
Of course.
I wasn't expecting a, yeah, it was great.
Because that's how this best of nominated podcast goes. Long answers to short questions.
That's kind of our thing. Which probably means we should talk about what show we're doing today. Because I think I was a little ambitious with how many questions I put together for tonight's show.
Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about them. I did just mention DOMS. And a couple of weeks ago, we had the Coltons on, and we were talking mm-hmm. about micronutrient deficiency and the importance of supplements and what kind of supplements are commonly needed among people, specifically on the paleo diet. And we've also had a gallbladder show where we talked about the fact that I need to take supplements. I think we've mentioned that people who have a thyroid condition, disease, or are missing a thyroid should be also on a supplement because it is... not functioning in their body the same way that I don't have a gallbladder and therefore not functioning in my body. We've talked a lot about these things, and you know, Sarah and I have been accumulating a lot of questions on supplements, and I think I speak for both of us when I say that we've kind of been reserving those on purpose and just kind of not tackling the show because we're both not doctors. We're both not nutritionists. We're both kind of feeling like these are questions that you need to ask medical professionals. And so although we're going to tackle some questions today and we can tell you our opinions or we can talk about it from a scientific perspective based on our own individual research or knowledge, I want to make it very clear to people that the reason that we're having the show is because it's a recurring theme that kind of is weaved throughout some of the other shows that we have, and we get a lot of questions both through the podcast and through our own blogs about this topic. But I do want to just remind everyone that I am on supplements that were prescribed to me by a nutritional therapy practitioner after undergoing an evaluation, and I encourage everyone to work with a professional before taking any sort of non-whole food source supplementation into their diets. And I'm sure Sarah will talk about how whole food supplementation can and should be done because it's what we both, you know, prioritize in our own lives, but it's also not the only thing that we do. And so I think a lot of you want to hear what we do. And what I really want to discourage everyone from doing is just doing what we do, because we both are very different from what you have going on. And just because I take ox bile, or just because Sarah takes probiotics, or just because, you know, whatever you hear from us today doesn't mean, oh, go out and buy this thing and thoughtlessly take it and not pay attention to what your body's telling you. So is that enough of a disclaimer?
That was probably more than enough of a disclaimer, but yes.
Okay. Cool. Do you want to tackle science?
Yeah, sure.
Or did you have anything else you wanted to say?
you beat the...
Got it.
We're good. Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys. Science. All right, so today's Science with Sarah is actually kind of a sneaky way of answering an extra question. I wanted to answer a question that came from LaDonna from Odessa, Texas. And she was asking some questions about probiotics, and she asked me if it was better to take probiotics with food or without. And this is actually a really interesting question, because when you think about sort of traditional sources of probiotics, like where we would get exposed to probiotics in the environment, we would get it from two sources. We would get it just from dirt and being dirty and not being able to wash our hands, and, you know, potentially touching our mouth and getting exposed that way. And we would get it from food. So, I mean, food, let's say unwashed, locally grown, fresh out of the ground type food has probiotics just on the surface. I mean, it's these soil-based organisms that we spend so much money on fancy supplements to take are just part of the environment, and they're part of plants because they grow in soil. So when you eat, you know, organically grown plants grown in good soil, fresh out of the ground, or relatively recently picked, you're getting those probiotics as part of your food. The other place where you get probiotics is fermented foods. In Paleolithic era, you know, people probably did eat fermented food in the sense of, you know, fruit that had fallen from a tree and was starting to go off. And then, of course, fermentation was very, very discovered very, very early in civilization as a way of preserving food and has been part of the human diet for thousands and thousands of years. So when you look at the natural sources of probiotics in our environment, some you would get as part of a food source and some you would get not. When you look at supplements, a lot of these supplements, they're designed to be organisms that are natural to the large intestine. And so it's sort of normal to for companies to recommend taking with or without food. You'll see on the bottles, some companies will say take with food, some companies take without. The rationale for taking it without is that you want these organisms to be delivered to the large intestine without necessarily having the stimulus to grow. And then when they get to the large intestine, they'll find a great environment to live in. The rationale behind taking it with food is that this is sort of a natural delivery system that you would naturally be consuming these organisms with food, and it's a pretty normal thing for them to have some stimulus to grow as they go down the digestive tract, which helps them survive. So when they get to the large intestine, they're actually still alive. So some companies will actually measure whether or not their supplement does better with food or without. Some will just recommend something based on a scientific study. I generally recommend going with whatever the company that made your supplement recommends. When in doubt, I think it's more natural to get supplements with food. And actually, you'll probably find that more often than not that a probiotic supplement should be taken with food. But really, the reason why this is an interesting question to talk about is there's really no good, clear answer. So try taking it with food. And if that's not working for you after a couple of weeks, switch it up and try taking without and see if that works better for you. I mean, the solution when there's no clear answer is always self-experimentation.
I'm good with that.
Sweet.
Questions?
Of course.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Our first question is from Christina from Chico, California. I listened to your podcast about nutrition, and I want to dial in what supplements I need for my body. I just wanted to get your opinion on the best resources for dialing in what my body needs. I think I can do the research myself rather than going to a dietitian and wanted some good resources. And I think the reason why I wanted to start with this question, Stacey, is because from the fairly limited background that Christina gave us, it sounds like she is, you know, relatively young, fit, healthy person. And I thought starting with answering the question of what supplements might somebody who is completely healthy and eating a paleo diet and active should take is like the perfect place to start.
Okay. So I want to start by encouraging whole food nutrient-dense supplements. I think that that is the best place to start, and that's what really worked for me. I think some of the best underutilized things are some of the things that Sarah and I talk about all the time. Bone broth is going to be really good for calcium. A lot of paleo people are concerned about getting enough calcium, and you don't want to get that from, let's say, almonds entirely, because then you're getting a really big hit of omega-6 and some other things if you're just trying to get your calcium solely from that. So it's not just soup every day. You don't have to have soup to have bone broth. I think Sarah and I both have talked about, You know, using broth to cook other foods often works really well. Adding it to dishes, you know, to start a gravy or a roux, or, you know, if you're cooking a meat in a crock pot or something like that, using that as your source for cooking is really great too. I know a lot of people are adopting kind of a safe starch, perfect health diet of paleo, and I was talking to Russ Crandall, who's kind of what I consider the foodie and the leader of that movement, and he was telling me that he eats white rice, and he was talking about getting some more nutrients into his diet. I was like, well, I can tell you right now, the number one way to do that is to cook your rice in broth. Like, if you're cooking your rice in water right now, cook your rice in broth, and you've just given yourself a huge nutrient punch that you weren't already getting. And, you know, we talk about liver a lot. We talk about heart a lot. These are the organ meats that you can find good transition type hidden recipes on both Sarah and I's sites. Beyond Bacon's a really good resource for that right now that is available for you to pick up. Even Eat Like a Dinosaur has broth and organ meats hidden in it. We didn't really talk about it a lot at the time, but it is something that we've kind of always believed as being part of the paleo diet. So you can find those recipes on both of Sarah on my site and in our cookbooks, and I know that it'll be in Sarah's cookbook when it comes out. Fermented foods is a really good source of probiotics, like Sarah was mentioning. And one of the other things that I found really beneficial for myself personally is taking Epsom salt soaks. And this is a good way if you're concerned about magnesium, where you don't have to actually consume something to get the benefit of a quote-unquote supplement. I'd like to take Epsom salt soaks before bed, particularly when my muscles are fatigued. But it's also really good if I'm stressed out or kind of needing to relax. It's like a sedative. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's really awesome, and it is a good punch of magnesium, which is one of the deficiencies that the Caltons identified when they were on the show earlier. So I will let Sarah jump in on sardines and some of her other foods. foods.
Yeah, I love that you are basically saying, you know, you don't actually need anything that's in a pill form. You know, following a paleo diet with a mind towards including some of these really nutrient dense foods in your diet is really all a healthy person needs to do. And there really is no need for anything else. So, yeah, sardines. I was going to add only two things to the list that you already gave, which is awesome. One is seafood. And actually, seafood is sort of divided into sort of fish and shellfish. Shellfish often ties and sometimes even beats organ meat in terms of micronutrients. So, you know, there's certain micronutrients that, you know, are just, you just can't beat liver, but there's a lot that shellfish are just as good or better in as well. So, you know, I always say like the two most nutrient dense foods, certainly proteins that you can be eating, are organ meats and shellfish. So focusing on getting some shellfish in your diet. The other thing that's really important about fish and shellfish as a broader group is the omega-3 fats. And that is something that has really diverse health benefits associated with it. And especially if you are a person who sort of standard in the sort of healthy paleo community, reaching for, you know, handfuls of nuts as snacks and things like that, you really need to make sure that you're including fish in your diet to balance the omega-6s that you're getting from nuts. Sardines are a fish. If you eat small fish, something like sardines, what's great about sardines is you're getting the organ meats. You're getting that super, super nutrient dense part of the fish as well. And you're getting the bones. And you can get also like canned salmon where the bones have gone soft. And that is probably the best source of minerals required for bone health that you can get in the diet. It's sort of when you look at measurements of how much of these minerals there are in broth, it's always commercially produced broth. So it's really hasn't been measured in homemade broth. So I don't know actually if you can compare, you know, a good broth that's been simmered on the stove for 48 hours versus the bones in fish. Let's just assume that they're both really, really good sources of essential minerals. And then we like vegetables. And if you ferment a vegetable, you make all the nutrients more bioavailable. It's easier to digest and you get the probiotics. But, you know, even non-fermented vegetables are amazing sources of really, really important, not just vitamins and nutrients, but phytochemicals, which is sort of the third class of micronutrients. That includes all kinds of antioxidants, things like polyphenols, all kinds of cancer preventing chemicals like the indole and garlic. There's just tons and tons, and probably many that haven't even been identified yet, beneficial micronutrients in vegetables. And that's all I have to add, I think.
Cool.
Can I tell you something? I just got an email.
Were you nominated?
Jane. Yay! And The Paleo Approach was nominated Most Anticipated New Paleo Book.
Nice!
I know! Isn't that awesome? So now people can go vote for my book, too!
Congratulations.
Doing another happy dance.
See, you know how it feels now. You wish you had 7 minutes to just gloat on that.
I do. I'll take 10 seconds.
Okay. Did you get notified about the Paleo View, too?
Yes.
Cool. Awesome. Go vote, everyone, right now while you're... Not if you're driving. Maybe pull over.
Yeah.
But it'll take, you know, like 2 minutes to just push a radio dial button. And Sarah and I would love to represent you and the paleo community as favorites. So Brownies Podcast, Mango Sticky Rice, Beyond Bacon, The Paleo Approach. If you love these things, go give them your love. Sorry, we interrupted your podcast with this
it's
message
not
from the sponsor.
I would throw it to questions, but I like literally just read the email.
Yeah, cool. Alrighty.
Not that I normally read email while we're recording a podcast or anything.
Never. Never. Not that I was just Instagramming a picture of sushi that I had for dinner. Never.
Yum.
Oh, Sarah, you'd be so proud of us. Let me tell you, it's on Instagram, so I can tell you exactly all the things that we ate. So you can tell me how very nutrient-dense and whole food supplement it was. Uni, salmon roe, salmon belly, tuna, seaweed, lotus root, avocado, crab, and squid were all on our plate among pickled ginger and, you know, stuff like that.
That looks so, so yummy.
It was, and I feel so satisfied. Like, I just got all my healthy omega-3s and my nutrient-dense and... I could eat that every day. Holy moly.
Caviar, like especially salmon roe, is some of the most concentrated sources of omega-3 fatty acids of like any food.
That's what Amy was telling me, and I'm pretty sure she was quoting you from a podcast, which is why it was funny that she was telling me that as we had dinner together. But
love you, Amy.
Cool. Amy was like, when we were ordering, Amy's like, well, we've got to get salmon roe because it's like the most nutrient dense. I was like, okay, Amy, so I love you.
Oh, speaking of nutrient density.
Nina.
Nina from Sacramento, California. She writes, I've been doing paleo for a few months now, but I'm still unable to go off Prilosec, which for anybody out there is a proton pump inhibitor used to treat acid reflux. I have read all sorts of paleo advice on the subject, and I am adding fermented foods, don't eat grains, but if I go off the heartburn meds any longer than 2 to 3 days, the acid reflux becomes unbearable. My questions are these. If the causes of heartburn are what the paleo community believes, buildup of gas in the stomach and not enough acid, then what is the mechanism behind proton pump inhibitors like Prilosec providing relief from symptoms? Because I definitely feel better when I keep taking it than when I stop. I would love to go off the meds and optimize my digestion naturally, not to mention getting away from all the side effects from taking proton pump inhibitors long term, but how can I do that if it causes me pain? If there is something else going on, like H. pylori or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, how do I figure out and or treat it naturally? I'm not sure my HMO doctor will be willing to do a bunch of random tests, and if she does, she'll want to medicate me somehow, which is not what I want. Any other thoughts and or advice on the subject would be greatly appreciated. I thought this would be a good opportunity to kind of run through the basics of digestive support supplements, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about her specific sort of health questions.
Okay, so I see two things in here, and I'm also going to submit a question from a person who I know in real life at the gym who asked me this question this week, because I gave an answer, and I'm sure that you can give a more thorough answer, and it ties into this question. So, don't you love it when I throw things at you and you haven't had time to think or research it?
Love working on my feet, yeah.
Okay, so I see two things here going on in, well, there's usually two things that I associate with acid reflux. And the question that I got earlier this week was about someone who's having issues with a severe stomach pain that she's attributing to stomach ulcers. And I thought that I remembered, Sarah, you saying that stomach ulcers kind of not being a result of acid, but that it is a symptom that shows up when you eat acid, so that when people remove acid from their diet, they're not actually solving the problem that's causing the ulcers. They're just kind of hiding the symptom that is surfacing when they eat an acid. And I thought I remembered you saying that ulcers are heavily scientifically tied with actually acid reflux now being kind of the cause of the irritation in the stomach lining, rather than kind of from the food that they eat. So that's why I'm tying it into this question. Am I remembering that completely wrong?
It's not quite right. So
see, this is why it's a good thing I asked the question.
So, acid reflux is when there's a sphincter at the top of the stomach. It's called the lower esophageal sphincter. And, it is basically supposed to be closed when you're not eating or swallowing, to keep all of the acid in your stomach. So acid reflux is caused by a failure of that sphincter so that the acid can creep up the esophagus. And what this woman is talking about with buildup of gas in the stomach, it's not actually buildup of gas in the stomach per se, so much as buildup of gas or overgrowth of bacteria that's creating volume in the small intestine, which is putting pressure on the stomach and actually all of the organs in the abdomen, which is putting pressure on that sphincter and sort of mechanically forces it open, which is not a natural state for it, and allows acid reflux. And this is described really, really, really well in Practical Paleo. Diane has a post on balancebites.com explaining this concept. I have a post on my site explaining this concept. Ulcers are caused by injury to the stomach wall. So the cells that line the stomach, they're acid-producing cells. And the acidity of the stomach, if you didn't have some sort of way of protecting the cells that line the stomach, it would burn a hole through it. So those cells secrete this kind of mucus to protect themselves from the acid that they're producing in the stomach. What happens with an ulcer is you get some damage to the wall of the stomach. You get sort of a loss of that mucus layer, and you get some damage to the cells. And then, of course, like a bleeding ulcer is where that damage is bad enough that you're bleeding into the stomach. Ulcers are really, really highly correlated to H. pylori infections, whereas acid reflux is very highly correlated to poor digestion leading to small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So they're kind of two different things, although they can actually have a root cause, which is Helicobacter pylori, or H. pylori, because H. pylori reduces stomach acid production, which hinders digestion and can feed overgrowth, and then you can get acid reflux. Although just because you have acid reflux or ulcers does not mean you necessarily have either of these infections. testing for H. pylori is a relatively straightforward test. You drink a sugary drink, and then they measure the amount of, I believe it's a methane test. Is it a hydrogen breath test or a methane breath test for H. pylori? I don't actually remember. But you basically, it's a radioactive breath test, I think. You drink some sugary drink, they measure something in your breath, and then they tell you if you have H. pylori. And then the usual course of action is antibiotics and acid reducers, although a lot of functional medicine specialists and alternative practitioners will instead do acid supplements to support digestion while you're killing the H. pylori. So there are sort of these two different approaches, conventional versus alternative. And I, you know, very frankly, do not know enough about the differences between those approaches to be able to recommend one or the other. And I think it's just important to talk to your doctor. H. pylori infections affect something like 50% of the world's population. And it may not be that the H. pylori infection itself is the problem so much as the immune system not being able to cope with it. And when the immune system is not coping very well with H. pylori, that usually points to micronutrient deficiencies, which might be, of course, caused by the fact that digestion is sluggish. That was a whole lot of information that was still not talking about digestive support supplements.
Okay, so my answer of her not eating dairy was still a good suggestion because
yes,
that's going to help with H. pylori.
Yes.
No, I need to also tell her to not eat sugar, which I think I also told her.
You know, one of the major things that you can do to support the immune system through any kind of infection is focus on fat-soluble vitamins. So actually something like grass-fed ghee would be really good because that gives you the A, D, and K2. And also vitamin A is extremely important in restoring the stomach barrier after any kind of infection like H. pylori or ulcers.
I did tell her that bone broth and coconut would be really good to help heal her belly too. That was correct, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, coconut actually is a antimicrobial, so it's one of the sort of natural antimicrobials that a alternative practitioner might prescribe. Along with, I mean, there's dozens of other choices, and I think a lot of practitioners have these like proprietary cocktails that they give people, but coconut oil would definitely be one of the ingredients that some people would use.
All right, so
digestive support. Yeah.
Okay, so one of the other things that I want to mention is I have the unique experience that isn't so unique because I've heard from many, many, many listeners and blog followers that they also were in this boat. I was a vegetarian for a very long time, 7 years. And following that, I had my gallbladder removed. And so when we talk about digestive support and acid reflux and the things that I take, I want to express to people that if this is something that I can get over, low stomach acid in particular, in my instance, then I believe that it's something a lot of people can work to improve in their own lives. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in 30 days. But eventually, I do believe if people are really focused on creating a good balance in their system overall with these nutrient-dense foods that we're talking about, that this is something that can be resolved over time. So I just want to speak up as someone with extensive experience with this type of problem, but I did used to have acid reflux before I went paleo. Fortunately, just going paleo in and of itself did solve my acid reflux, but it didn't actually solve my digestive issues because I wasn't focused on supporting my overall digestive once I got rid of acid reflux that first year. I was just doing kind of pom-poms and was so excited about it that I wasn't paying attention to some of the other digestive things that can be awry, particularly loose stools in my instance, but a lot of people can experience constipation or other digestive symptoms. The poop parade in Practical Paleo can be really useful for looking at when you're thinking about, do I have digestive issues? That's a really good tool. And Monica can put in the page number for that, because I know Diane talks about it if it's not on her site. So, I know, Sarah, that you've also used to be on prescription strength medicine.
I was on prescription strength acid reflux medication as one of my six different medications. I was on a lot of gastrointestinal symptom medications, and I was on proton pump inhibitors for probably 8 or 9 years before going paleo. And it was one of the things that I just stopped. Like I didn't, I just decided I didn't need them anymore. And my acid reflux basically went away with paleo, although I have added digestive enzymes into my routine since then and noticed a really big difference when I did that. Why don't we sort of talk about the four or three, one can be divided in half, types of digestive support supplements. So there's basically hydrochloric acid, which is a stomach acid. That is what your stomach acid is. It's a stomach acid supplement. There's ox bile, which Stacey has talked about, which is a support for a missing gallbladder or a insufficiently functioning gallbladder. And then there's digestive enzymes, which supports your pancreatic function. So if your pancreas is what produces digestive enzymes, you would take a digestive enzyme supplement if your pancreas is not up to snuff. Now, acid in the stuff that leaves the stomach and goes into the first part of the small intestine is a really important signal to the gallbladder to release bile into the small intestine and to the pancreas to release pancreatic enzymes into the small intestine. So if you have insufficient stomach acid, you sort of automatically have insufficient pancreatic and gallbladder function. So by taking just a stomach acid supplement, many people can basically fix everything else downstream. The problem with taking a stomach acid supplement is that it's contraindicated for a lot of people. So it's contraindicated if you have ulcers or a history of ulcers or suspected ulcers, if you take any kind of NSAID like Advil or Motrin. It's contraindicated if you have a hiatal hernia, which is a hernia in the lower esophagus that might it does the mechanical opening of that sphincter by itself. It's contraindicated if you have any kind of blood clotting disorder. It's contraindicated if you have severe esophagus damage from acid reflux, or if you have something like Barrett's esophagus, which is basically severe damage and actually a disease that's affecting the esophagus due to long-term effects from acid reflux. And so if you aren't completely sure about acid reflux medicine, I always say do not take acid supplements without talking to a healthcare practitioner first, because there are so many ways that it may not be appropriate for you. When stomach acid supplements are not appropriate, you can basically target the downstream parts of the whole system by supplementing with ox bile to support gallbladder function or with pancreatic enzymes, also called digestive enzymes, and you can do that instead. With digestive enzymes, there's two major classes. There's pancreatic enzymes, which are usually either cow or pig derived, literally pancreatic enzymes from cows or pigs. Pigs are a little bit more, they're a little bit closer to human digestive enzymes, but of course there's lots of people who don't want to eat pig enzymes for various reasons. So there's that sort of class. Those enzymes are particularly good at helping digest fats and helping digest proteins. The other class of digestive support enzymes that are available are plant enzymes. These are enzymes, they're the same sort of classes of, you know, fat, protein, and carbohydrate digesting enzymes, but they come from plant sources. They're actually designed for vegans and vegetarians to help break down cell walls in plant matter and help break down fiber to get more nutrients out of them. This is a really good supplement to take if you're a person who has a hard time with vegetables. So if you notice that you get bloated when you eat vegetables, they're even worth trying if you suspect that you have a FODMAP sensitivity. And they're very, very good for anybody who has identifiable plant bits in their stools or who have any kind of digestive distress when they're eating a lot of vegetables. So, and you can actually combine pancreatic enzymes with plant enzymes. But again, you may not want to take a, you might want to sort of play with the dose. Like you might want to take a full dose of both. So that's something to definitely talk to a healthcare provider about doing before you try it. And that's all I have to say about digestive support supplements. Whew.
Did I hear you say that if you're having trouble digesting raw veg,
mm-hmm.
that it might be pancreatic?
Yes.
Fascinating. I learned something on this podcast.
Yes. And so it may be, there's a lot of different things that can be going on with digesting raw vegetables, but one of the things can be is basically not enough enzymes out of the pancreas to help break down. Those carbohydrates in vegetables can be really hard to break down. So that can be sort of a sign that there's not quite enough of those carbohydrate breaking down enzymes. And taking plant enzymes is very, very efficient at helping to digest. You know, it helps break down fiber and helps break down those other carbohydrates. So it can be really, really helpful for digesting vegetables. That's actually what I take. I take plant enzymes. And I eat a lot of vegetables.
I need you to email me about this later. Cool. I'm good.
You're good. So did we answer her question? How to go off? Let's talk for her a little bit about how to go off proton pump inhibitors. Because I think what she's finding is that she tries to go off and then her heartburn comes back. So definitely, again, talking to a healthcare professional first, the best way to go about that is to support digestion with digestive support supplements, what in that group is appropriate for her, and get digestion working smoothly. Getting lots of sleep can be really, really important here. Getting a lot of omega-3 fatty acids can be really, really helpful as well. And limiting fructose can be really, really helpful in regulating various hormones that regulate digestion. And then once those pieces are falling into place, and that might take a few weeks or even like a month and a half of taking those supplements and, you know, making sure you're chewing your food and making sure you're not drinking so much with meals and all of those other meal hygiene type things before you can start weaning off the proton pump inhibitors. The reason why they work is because they reduce the acidity of the stomach and they don't stop the contents of the stomach from going up the esophagus. So you actually still have reflux, it's just not as acidic. And so that doesn't irritate the esophagus as much. So if her symptoms are coming back when she stops taking the proton pump inhibitors, it's because she still has reflux. And that probably is because her digestion is still not great. But taking proton pump inhibitors reduce stomach acidity, so they hinder digestion. So you can't ever optimize digestion while you're taking them. So it's one of those, it's a tough one. You have to sort of support digestion at the same time as you wean off of them and then continue to support digestion until your body starts to take over. And then the idea with all of these supplements is that, you know, most people should be able to go off of them eventually.
Yes. I support your answer.
That was a really long one.
Yeah, we didn't go off on any tangents on that
one. Not, she asked 3-4 questions.
And so, then I asked another.
Yeah, that was a five in one. So our third question is from Sandy. And Sandy writes, I'm wondering about a supplement I have been taking called Dr. Ron's Smooth Operator. The ingredients are L-glutamine, N-acetylglucosamine, quercetin, ginger extract, slippery elm bark, marshmallow root, plantain leaf, and bioperin. Will this help to heal my digestive tract if I have SIBO or cause more problems? Also, I feel conflicted about the best way to eat to heal. Should I eat paleo with restrictions for SIBO, SCD, GAPS? I can't tolerate dairy, although I have had some success with 24-hour fermented yogurt, and SCD has so many nuts and dairy in it. Is paleo a better approach? Do you want me to tackle the supplement part of this first, since I know what most of these things actually are?
Surely.
Well, do you want to do it?
No. This is definitely a you show. I'm just here for the giggles.
I don't think that's necessarily true, but I'll still take some giggles. So, this is an interesting supplement because it involves a couple of different chemicals that are known to support the health of the cells that line the small intestine, with some immune modulators and some mucus secretion stimulators. So I think whether or not this is an appropriate supplement really depends on exactly what's happening in Sandy's body. I mean, she definitely has gastrointestinal symptoms. But she hasn't really told us very much about anything else in particular. She talks about a rash that she's had. So I can sort of break down the two chemicals that may actually be really helpful. Actually, the one that has the most science behind it is L-glutamine. And we have really a fairly good body of scientific literature supporting L-glutamine as a supplement to help restore gut barrier function. So if you have a leaky gut, L-glutamine is really good at helping those cells plug the holes. N-acetylglucosamine is a sugar that can be, that is part of the mucus barrier, and I'm not entirely sure what it does to be consuming that sugar, if that somehow is supposed to help mucus formation. It's actually part of the glycocalyx, which is what holds the mucus to the cells in the small intestine. Slippery arm and marshmallow root are chemicals that stimulate mucus secretion, which can help healing. The problem with them is that they're also immune stimulators, as are quercetin, and ginger can be even in high amounts. So that may be a problem for some people. If you've got an autoimmune disease or even an immune disease as part of what's going on behind your symptoms, then taking immune stimulators could make it worse. So of all of those things, I think that it might be worth trying to see if you feel like it's helping you, but you could also just get a straight L-glutamine supplement, and that has some really, really good science behind it, and just take L-glutamine, and it's actually a fairly inexpensive supplement as well. So she asked about the different approaches. SCD and GAPS have a lot of similarities in the sense that
actually answered that question before. Monica can link. Not that you can't answer that.
I'll give it a brief answer, and then Monica can link to the show where we talk about it in more details. SCD and GAPS basically are designed to treat SIBO by eliminating starches. So you eliminate all of the food for whatever's overgrowing. The problem with both of those approaches is that over the long term, you can end up with undergrowths because you're not actually consuming enough food for the normal probiotic bacteria that are supposed to live in your digestive tracts. So they can be really useful therapeutically for a couple of weeks. But over the long term, they're not very sustainable for most people. Some people have great success on them, but a lot of people end up migrating from those diets to something more like paleo. The other thing with gastrointestinal symptoms is both SCD and GAPS have not been validated at all in the scientific literature, but low FODMAP diets, which also has a lot of similarities, have very extensive studies showing that they're beneficial in a variety of conditions, including irritable bowel syndrome and inflammatory bowel disease and you know, things like that. So my general recommendation for somebody with a lot of digestive symptoms is a low FODMAP paleo with digestive support supplements, which we just talked about. I don't recommend any more going low starch.
Cool. I feel like there's stuff going on in this question that I'm not particularly well versed in, but I will say that Sarah and I both experienced positive results in doing something like a 21-day sugar detox in terms of like removing sugar cravings. I know she talks about doing that detox, having symptoms die off, which led her to believe that she had SIBO. And I just don't know that that's like a long-term solution to a health problem. I think if I genuinely thought that I had something like that, I would be seeking medical intervention, whether naturopath or otherwise, for some antibiotics to solve the problem, and then, you know, re-inoculating with healthy foods is how I would personally.
There are definitely situations where doing non-absorbable antibiotics to treat SIBO is like absolutely the best way to go.
So I just want to throw that out there that we can still be paleo and take medicine. And I've
That's true.
I've heard Chris Kresser even say that, people.
So. If Chris Kresser says it, it must be true.
Must be true. Okay. So that's all I can contribute beyond what you've said.
No, that was awesome.
So I interrupt this question with some interesting factoids about the Paleo Magazine's best of because I wasn't distracted at all while you were answering that question. There are some really cool questions on here, people. Okay, first of all, it's very hard for me to vote in some of these categories because I love many things, and we're all going to experience this problem, and I just remind you that you love Sarah and I the best, so please make sure that you're going to win. But so here, Sarah, they say best paleo gear. Okay, so last year it was like Five Fingers and like things like that. There's still a couple of those in there. This year, you know what I'm voting for?
What?
Treadmill desk.
Oh, totally.
It's on the list. Yeah. Best lifestyle hack. Hello, blackout blinds in the bedroom. How awesome is that? How much do we talk about good sleep, right? Like that
all
is
the time. Do they not have amber tinted glasses as an option though?
They're actually not on there. Intermittent fasting, homemade standing desk, bulletproof coffee, and carb cycling. I'm actually going to look into carb cycling, but for a lifestyle hack, blackout blinds in the bedroom is like a huge definitizing thing for me. You are going to be disappointed in this one, but I will tell you that there's a great one following that you will like. Best paleo protein source, fish isn't on the list. Aren't you disappointed? I know. Beef, chicken, lamb, pork, and eggs. So.
And liver's not on the list.
No. Oh, well, a protein source. Liver's not.
I suppose. They mean animal, but fish isn't on there.
I know, because we just did a show about how that was the best amino acid.
Well, and do you remember when we were talking with the Coltons about like their nutritional analysis of the paleo diet and it coming up short?
Mm-hmm.
And both of their diet, you know, sample days didn't include fish, and I kind of think we should be eating fish like every day, if not twice
it's
a day.
Not even an option, because I went to look for fish, knowing that that is the best paleo protein source. Whether or not I eat it as often as I should isn't up for grabs. It's what's the best, and it wasn't even on the list. So of course I'm going with pork because I wrote the book on pork. Anyway, best paleo cooking fat, lard, duh.
Totally, yeah.
Best paleo kitchen essential. I had a hard time choosing between cast iron skillet and deep freezer because really I can't live without either. Last thing you're going to really love, best real foods supplement. fermented cod liver oil, bone
Segway.
Broth, yeah. grass-fed gelatin, organ meats, or seaweed. That is legit on this
Seriously?
List. Yes. How awesome is that?
That can I check every single thing on
I
that
know.
List?
I know, right?
Organ meat, but like clearly organ
I know,
meat.
You're going to vote organ meat and I'm going to vote bone broth because that's the essential difference between us. But we're a good compliment.
But bone broth is an awfully close second.
I was super excited about that. I'm like, wow, these people are with it, man. They are totally with it. Okay, I just voted. I got my vote in. Did you? You people, you should be voting. Oh, and look at that. As a thank you, I just got a code to receive 15% off a one-year subscription. Bonus! I think we have time for one more question.
Well, just because you talked about fermented cod liver oil, we should do this fermented cod liver oil question that we have.
Because it wasn't what I chose as my number one food supplement source.
Hmm, interesting. Dun, dun, dun. That was totally not scripted, folks.
Almost like I set us up on purpose there.
All right, so our last question is from Pam from Grafton, Massachusetts. I'm Stacy, Massachusetts.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you asking me a question?
M.A., Massachusetts?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Oh, it's another two-parter. So, Pam asks, when getting vitamin D from the sun, how much of your skin needs to be exposed? If I'm wearing long sleeves and long pants, so the sun is only on my face, is this sufficient? And the second part of the question is actually the fermented cod liver oil question. Also, what brand of fish oil, krill oil, or fermented cod liver oil do you recommend? I'm taking Carlson's now and want to know if it's still a good brand.
Okay. So... I do not take Carlson's. I believe that that is a heat krill oil FCL. Okay, I'm a little confused.
Okay.
So what brand of fish oil, comma, krill oil, comma, FCLO? Okay.
So if you were going to take something that was isolated from sea animals.
Gotcha. Okay.
What would you take?
So... if this is an interesting factoid for you all, my dad actually came to me earlier this month because he read an article somewhere that fish oil is like been linked to, I think, prostate cancer or something random. They're finding now in the regular science people, because my dad is about as standard American diet as it possibly gets. I think I've talked about his lean cuisines, his believe it's not butter and his statins. So if my dad is reading research about fish oil being problematic, we should all be paying attention to whether or not that's a really good whole source of synergistic vitamins and minerals. That's what we're looking for in what we call a whole food supplement. We're making sure that, you know, like the Carlton said, we're not taking one of something and not complementing it with the other things that it needs. And one of the things that we've talked about before in the show is how Rob Wolf used to recommend fish oil and then realizing that it wasn't a really great thing to kind of inundate and overpopulate your system with this on a chronic or long-term basis. And he found the recommendations of Chris Kresser at that time years ago to be fermented cod liver oil as a better solution to kind of overall synergistic vitamin. And it's a whole food source. So it can give you... I think it's vitamins A, D, K2, and some omega-3, obviously not as much as fish oil, but it's also more easily and readily absorbable by your body because it's in a whole food source and with synergistic vitamins and minerals. So of the three that she's asking about, I would definitely, and my family does, take fermented cod liver oil. My children take it on what we call an as-needed basis, meaning when somebody starts to get the sniffles or when someone in one of their classrooms is sick, we kind of use it as an what we think of as an immune booster. And they take a shot of the orange Oslo fermented cod liver oil in a shot glass with apple cider and or orange juice. And it is the most exciting thing that they get to do because they don't really get to drink juice. And so they're getting, you know, a big punch of vitamin C, and they're getting their fermented cod liver oil, and it tastes really great to them all combined in one little shot that they shuffle down their throat. I take it when I remember to take it, which lately hasn't been much, and I feel fine without it. Sometimes I get into a rhythm and I take it every day for a while, and honestly, I don't know that I see that much of a difference taking it on a regular day basis, so I know it's blasphemy, but I believe that that's because I'm eating a really nutrient-dense diet, rich in organ meats and bone broth regularly. Therefore, the benefits of the vitamins and minerals that a lot of people see from taking FCLO without those things in their diet is probably doing for them some of the things that I'm getting from nutrient-dense foods. I do use Beauty Balm on my face. I actually voted for it in the magazine as my favorite thing because I think that Beauty Balm is like the best thing ever. Tangent over. My answer is I would recommend fermented cod liver oil. And one of the reasons that I think that it's important people understand that we specifically recommend Green Pastures fermented cod liver oil or butter oil blend if you don't have an issue with butter is because it's not heat processed. So the fats are not oxidized. They are fermented. And a lot of the pills that you're going to find anywhere at a store on the shelf are heat processed in order to get the oils out, in which case most of them are already oxidized before you take them. So you're actually hitting yourself with oxidation rather than a healthy punch of omega-3s or whatever it is that you're looking for. And as we all know, oxidation in the system leads to inflammation, which why add inflammation to your system when you're eating a paleo diet in order to have a low inflammation lifestyle? Boom sauce. That's it for me. I don't even know where that came from. It's almost like George is here tonight. I'm so weird.
Oh, you're
and
channeling
random.
George.
Totally.
So I'll just expand a little bit on the studies that have shown health detriment to long-term fish oil supplementation, maybe.
That sounds perfect for you to discuss.
So what's really interesting about fish oil supplementation is there's a variety of studies that show benefits when it's taken over the short term, like 4 to 6 weeks. But there's now a growing group of studies that show increased risk of disease, some forms of cancer, and cardiovascular disease, actually, which is not one that you would normally think of when you're putting in sort of fats that are usually, you know, help thin the blood and you know, are supposed to be so protective against cardiovascular disease. So what is probably going on here is that when you first start taking fish oil supplements, you're taking these long chain omega-3 fatty acids that your body actually uses and actually are embedded in the membrane of every cell in your body and are used along with sort of competitively with a particular omega-6 fat called arachidonic acid. So arachidonic acid, DHA, and EPA all compete to be used as the sort of building blocks for various signaling molecules between cells. And if you use arachidonic acid, the omega-6 as a building block, those signals are more inflammatory. And if you use DHA or EPA from omega-3s, then those signals are less inflammatory. And so when you first take a fish oil supplement, you are probably correcting the balance. You're supposed to have a balance of omega-3s to omega-6s, somewhere between 1:1 and 1:4 omega-3s to 6s. And most people are getting something like 1:10 to 1:20. So when you first take fish oil supplements, you sort of flood the system with omega-3s and you end up being able to replace a lot of the omega-6s in the membranes of your cells with omega-3s, and that reduces inflammation. But over the long term, because of the way fish oil is, they're polyunsaturated fatty acids, which means they're the least stable fats. They're very readily oxidized. So over the long term, the consumption of oxidized fats builds up sort of an oxidizing stress in the body, and that's what is likely causing these other issues. So the solution is to eat fish, because the fats, when they're still part of the whole food, and this applies to polyunsaturated fats in nuts, in fish, in anything, when it's still part of the whole food and they're still bound to the various things that they're bound with, they're not as easily oxidized. So You know, just as a complete tangent, this applies to things like almond flour. If you bake with almond flour and get really concerned about the polyunsaturated fatty acids, those are still bound as part of the bound to the other components. So they're not as easily oxidized as, say, you were going to use almond oil. Almond oil, because the oil is isolated, those fats are much more easily oxidized. And the same thing is true for fish. So the best way to get your omega-3s is to eat some fish or some brains, because brains are actually an even better source of omega-3s. Just throwing that out there, because everyone knows I like snout to tail. The reason why we like fermented cod liver oil isn't so much as an omega-3 supplement. It's because, as Stacey was saying, it's the vitamins. It's a fat-soluble vitamin supplement. It's fermented, so it's got some kind of probiotic aspect, and it probably has things like short-chain fatty acids, which are very, very beneficial to the health of the cells that line the gut, because they're used for that cell's metabolism. So there's probably some other effects there that we don't actually know, because there are no comprehensive analyses of every single chemical in fermented cod liver oil. But we think of it more as a vitamin supplement rather than an omega-3 supplement. And really, even when we're talking about fermented cod liver oil being a vitamin supplement, those are all the vitamins that are in liver. That's fermented cod liver oil. It's the vitamins that you would be getting from eating organ meat. And when you eat the whole organ, you get not just the fat-soluble vitamins, but you get all of the amazing minerals and other micronutrients that you just can't get anywhere near that kind of concentration in other foods. Plus, you get some really, really important amino acids, and you get a slightly different ratio of amino acids than you do with muscles, which research is starting to show that that's really, really important, because we tend to, when we only eat muscle meat, we tend to actually get too many of some amino acids and not enough of others. So by adding seafood and organ meat into our diets, we can actually help correct those balances of amino acids, which is really important for health. So I really like fish for the omega-3s, and I really like organ meat for the vitamins and minerals and other micronutrients. Pam's, we're so fermented cod liver oil people, we forgot about the vitamin D. Pam's first question was about getting vitamin D from the sun and how much of your skin needs to be exposed. The answer is the more the better, but if just your face and hands are exposed, then it just means that you need to be outside for longer. But the benefits of being out in the sun are far more complicated than just creating vitamin D, and we can get vitamin D from foods. So I think it's really important to spend time outside, and unless you are specifically trying to tackle a low vitamin D level that your doctor measured by spending more time in the sun, I don't think you necessarily need to worry about how much of your skin is exposed, because I think the just as important, if not more important, benefit to being out in the sun is the blue light entering your eyes and help setting your circadian clock in your brain. And we've talked about circadian rhythms on this show actually relatively recently. But that's actually, I think, a far more important effect for long-term health, because it decreases stress and it improves sleep and it regulates a whole pile of hormones in your body to just be outside for 15 minutes at least during the day. So that was a quick answer, because I already did some more answers.
Well, I feel like we tackled that show a lot.
We haven't done such a long show in a while.
And I also want to say that, because I've been asked this question a million times, the particular supplements that I take are through a company called Biotics, which you can't buy yourself. You actually need someone who is licensed or accredited with them in order to get essentially the prescription for those supplements. I take an HCL type supplement. I take an OxBio supplement for the reasons that we talked about during the digestive question. I take a magnesium supplement, and I also take Epsom salt soaks, as we've talked about, because I have found from my own personal research and listening to my body cues that I have a magnesium deficiency. I am working on getting that in through whole food sources, and I found that my favorite source of magnesium is chocolate.
Sweet. I wish chocolate didn't give me horrible acne.
Yeah, I'm really glad that I don't have that problem right now. But that's because bone broth, which is another whole food source, which I eat on the regular. I also take, as we mentioned last time, chromium. And the particular reason this, I was asked several times after the last podcast, the reason that I take chromium, it is one of the top deficiencies that the Coltons mentioned before, but I didn't know that. Actually, I first heard about chromium on Jimmy Moore's podcast as it relates to blood sugar regulation. And did some research into it myself and found that it's pretty common in people who have a history with obesity. I mean, I don't know how else to describe metabolic derangement or, you know, however you want to describe it, that even when you're regulating your blood sugar through a whole food sources and you're kind of focused on eating nutrient-dense foods, that sometimes the damage that you've caused to your body over a lifetime can be difficult to overcome. As, you know, a doctor would tell you, if you smoke for 20 years and then you stop for a couple of months, it's not like you didn't smoke for 20 years. And that's exactly what I did to my body with really bad food choices. And just because I've been paleo for a couple of years doesn't mean that my body's still not, you know, affected by how I treated it for the first 20 some years, 28, 29 years, whatever.
just, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
sometimes people don't get that and you need to put it into perspective. So, I have personally found that I feel less interested in, refined carbohydrates and sweet things if I have a chromium in the morning. It's just my personal experience. And whether or not that's in my head, I don't know, but it works for me. So those are the supplements that I personally take. I also try to eat whole food sources of fermented foods. I eat organ meat several times a week, and I have bone broth at least six times a week.
I eat oysters for chromium.
You know what? That's really awesome. And sometimes I buy oysters at the store. Sometimes I,
it's one of my
mussels and stuff. Like Cole loves it when I buy those kinds of things. But, I don't know why. It's just not something, you know why it is? Honestly, because we don't buy meat at the store. I think that's the thing. Like in my brain, I don't buy meat at the store. And so when I go to the store, I'm going for like a particular list of things that are like, you know, produce and pantry staples and stuff like that. And I don't even like go to the area where Whole Foods.
I actually buy canned oysters because it's one of my convenience foods. Mm. So it's one of my like, oh, I need
what
to eat something.
I
buy Crown Prince, and they're not the cheapest, but they have really, really good sustainable farming practices.
Can I get them
and
on Amazon?
The oysters you have to pay shipping for. You can get a lot of their other products on Amazon, but the oysters you can't. But I buy them at Trader Joe's, and they're actually cheaper from Trader Joe's than they are on Amazon.
Like in the canned section?
Yeah, with the canned fish.
All right.
And so for me, they're one of my – and, you know, on the autoimmune protocol, there's not that many convenience foods. Mm-hmm. So they're one of my convenience foods, and I probably have them a couple times a week. And what else was I going to say? Oh, yeah. And the other thing about Crown Prince is all of their cans are BPA-free.
Nice.
Yeah. So I also buy Crown Prince sardines. That's like my go-to brand.
What's like number two and three source of chromium?
I don't remember all the sources, but one of the ones that I remember is blackstrap molasses is crazy, crazy, crazy high in chromium.
Really?
Yeah. And so I have actually been known when I'm having a crazy sugar craving, which let's face it, happens a lot with book stress, of having like a teaspoon of blackstrap molasses. And if you've ever had, like, blackstrap molasses is a whole lot less sweet than other kinds of molasses. I'm sure there's chromium in both, but I don't have the regular molasses in my house. I just have blackstrap. And that will like totally fix my sugar craving. And I don't think it's because it has sugar in it. I think it's because of
the chromium
and like tons of other minerals. It's like crazy high in calcium and iron.
You know what? That would be really good. Like, as I talk about sugar cravings, that would be really good drizzled over fruit, I bet. Like, if you found a stone fruit or something, because it's kind of a spicy flavor. I'm thinking how I could incorporate that into, like, a semi-frequent breakfast routine.
Not just have it by the spoonful.
Yeah, because I'm not hard.
No, it's like, for me, it's like, it's when I'm, like, literally, I am going to go crazy because I am jonesing for sugar so much. And I know that it's, you know, it's the stress that it's getting to me. And I know that if I give in to the sugar craving, I'm going to feel even worse. So what do I do? And it's sort of one of my, like, tricks for, you know, dealing with the sugar craving in a way that is not going to undermine everything else that I'm doing to try to be healthy. The only supplements that I take magnesium. One of the reasons why so many people take magnesium is because magnesium is depleted when you're stressed. And I have had to increase my magnesium throughout the last few months working on the book. And it actually has really, really helped. I take plant enzymes, which I've already discussed, to help digest the crazy amount of vegetables that I eat. I've been playing with taking some vitamin C the last month or so, in part because my kids have had a lot of colds, and in part because vitamin C is also depleted with stress. And I think that I feel better taking it, but again, it could be placebo effect. And the other one I take is, the only other thing I take is Prescriptocyst, which is a soil-based organism probiotic. So pretty minimal, actually, really, for somebody with autoimmune disease. I really believe in getting nutrients from whole food sources as much as possible. So I eat organ meat almost every day. I eat fish almost every day. I drink broth. I kind of go on broth spurts. So I'll have like 10 days in a row where I have it, and then I'll skip a few days. And then maybe I'll have a week where I sort of only have it twice because I was just drinking it out of the freezer. So I kind of go on, it's sort of a, I broth cycle. And I eat a lot of homemade fermented vegetables, mostly sauerkraut. And I eat a lot of just regular old vegetables too.
What do you recommend people find Prescriptocyst? Is that on Amazon? Can we put a link in the show notes?
It is on Amazon. And I buy mine off Amazon. Some like practitioners will be able to sell it. I've never seen it in a store. So you might be able to get it directly from your naturopath or whatever. But
so again, as a reminder, people, we're telling you what we personally take. You can hear that Sarah and I take different things. You can also hear that I am interested in what Sarah takes and why. And it is both a self-experimentation, but it should also be led by someone who is knowledgeable and professional in the field of understanding these things. So I do not encourage anyone to just go to the show note links and order everything and cross their fingers and hopes it works out, because that's not a really great choice.
And yes, there's self-experimentation, but then there's like self-experimentation. There's like, I'm trying to optimize my diet for the best health. And then there's like, I'm going to turn into a supervillain.
What we can tell you is if you just start eating oysters and livers, you won't turn into a supervillain.
Probably not.
Okay. Well, we hope that this answers all of your questions and doesn't just make you ask us 50,000 more, because I feel like this really stretched the boundaries of what Sarah and I are comfortable answering on the show. But hopefully you understand now why we constantly refer to the whole food source supplements that we do on the show, though we don't necessarily call them that all the time. We both have talked a million times about how focusing on nutrient density and eating for our health have healed us or, you know, put us on the road to recovery of a lot of our ailments. You've heard some of those things this evening, including, you know, acid reflux. I also want to mention, you know, things like depression have been managed by healthy fats in my diet. I also want to talk about, you know, sleep habits and joint pain specifically have been directly influenced by the foods that I eat and how I eat them. So all of these things, in addition to the digestive stuff that we regularly talk about, are influenced by the nutrients that you're putting into your body and or what you're not putting into your body. So we hope that this show encourages you to really think about those things yourself and add some fish, add some bone broth, add some organ meats, and then think about maybe what might still be missing and then work from there. But whole foods is really where it's at. Just like in the standard American diet, you can't just go get a diet pill and solve your problems. In the paleo world, you can't just go grab a supplement pill and solve your problems. You should really be trying to do that with the food that's here for us. It's in a whole food form for a reason. That synergistic relationship that vitamins and minerals have with one another is really important. And I do want to give a plug to, it'll be in the show notes, the Balanced Bites show with Chris Masterjohn, where they talk about nutrient density and synergistic relationships with vitamins and minerals.
That's a good one. Too bad they had sound issues on that one, but
it's a really good show.
Yeah.
So
forgive them the sound issues. It's still good.
It's still worth listening to.
Yeah.
Cool. It's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
As a All reminder, right. Now that you're done listening to the show, and hopefully you've arrived wherever you are, if you were traveling in your
car. If you're still listening.
You should, A, leave a review on iTunes if you haven't already, and B, vote for Sarah and I and the show on the Paleo Magazine Best Of, because we would love to put that icon on our blogs and represent you in the community.
That would be so awesome.
Wouldn't it?
Okay, vote for our books, too. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to give a recap one more time of what we're nominated in. Yeah, hold on, I don't even have it pulled up anymore. The Paleo View is nominated for Best Podcast. You're listening to it right now, so you must like it. I really would love to win the best treat recipe for the best brownies and Beyond Bacon, because I know that is well-loved. Best Culinary Recreation, Mango Sticky Rice, and Best New Cookbook under Special Topics, Beyond Bacon. And Sarah was also nominated under Most Anticipated Upcoming Paleo Book, The Paleo Approach. So if you love us, show us. All it takes is a little click of a radio button. You don't even have to, like, register or log in or, you know, sign away your first child in order to get to the site. You literally click the link that's in the show notes and click some radio buttons. You can do it on your phone or your iPad. Thank you.
Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Just going to stay here and wait for you.
Now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
That would be because I had it on mute. I was like trying to change all the settings and everything. Yes, I'm a genius.